Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD. This is our Monday evening Hoops HD report. I'm
Woohoo!
your host up here, Chad Sherwood, joined on my side here by Joey Fortson. Down below, and we've got the puppet David Griggs. And down below me, we've got John Tytel.
Chad, put me on top.
No.
I don't like it down here.
No.
Move me up to the top, Chad. I told you I wanted to be up there. Up, right up there.
We've got a lot to get to tonight, actually. One thing we don't have to worry about is games going final after we start the show. We're starting a little after 9 p.m. Eastern, and other than a last-place battle pretty much in the Pac-12 between Washington State, that's a blowout at the moment. Even all college basketball has gone final with a combination of the bad weather cancellations and some COVID postponements.
Such disrespect for the Apple Cup.
Yeah.
Disrespect. Yeah, my
No, it's a crap game. Not even I'm watching it.
Larry Scott would be very disappointed you have not tuned into his network.
Oh, Larry, well, Larry Scott is a disappointment anyway.
Larry Scott's on his way out. But let's let me try to see if I can get this right. I want to start with, actually, over the weekend, we saw the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee release its top 16 teams. Now, obviously, this doesn't tell us where teams sit in terms of the bubble, but it gives us an idea of what they're looking at this year and not looking at. I'm going to go ahead and pull it up on the screen here, what they released this weekend. And John, you are our selection committee guessing expert. So what were your thoughts on the what the committee released? And were you surprised at all by their top 16?
I was not surprised. I mean, there's a couple of teams you can make an argument for in the four line. I think the one line is perfect. I think the other three lines look very reasonable. No, I think I would go with a no veto.
You're not going to veto the guys that are veto proof. Joby, your thoughts also, you know, just.
I thought the seeds, you know, you could quibble here and there. Oh, does Missouri have a stronger resume than that? You know, is Iowa playing like it poorly to be the top four? These are quibbles on it. I think there weren't surprises. The surprise to me was that they essentially gave you the five line as well. I have never heard them say, oh, other teams we considered. And they made it extremely clear that the top five seed is either Southern Cal or Florida State. And we'll get to Florida State. I think Florida State might have moved accordingly.
Florida State definitely ahead of Missouri right now after what they did tonight.
Yeah. And so Florida State and Southern Cal are right there. And they said two Big Ten teams. Wisconsin is clearly one of them. I think Purdue is probably the other, but they essentially gave you the five line, and that's never happened before. So that gives you even more depth of what they're looking at and what the impact of that is. Power, deep power conferences will get major mucho respect, specifically to the Big Ten and the Big 12. If you are in those conferences, you are going to get a lot of respect.
Well, it's I mean, and again, what I'm guessing, Joby, is that those were the carryover teams who most likely would have been the five line, if you know the process, probably at least three out of four, maybe all four of them. But one of the things I'm curious to see if anything jumps out at particularly the two of you, because you're a lot better at guessing it than I am. You know, when you look at a team like Tennessee and Texas, it doesn't look like there's much recency bias. Tennessee probably not playing like a three seed right now, but has a three seed level profile. You could say the same for Texas, albeit Texas has dealt with not being at full strength and being shorthanded. When you look at a team like Texas Tech and Missouri and West Virginia, well, everybody here, with the exception of maybe Michigan over Ohio State, it seems like the focus is not entirely on the top of the profile. Especially with a team like Houston being on the two line with some of their really bad losses. But the top of the profile trumps the bottom of the profile, at least in this range. Those are two takeaways. Am I way off? Am I spot on? Where am I with that?
I'll jump in on the recency bias. I agree with you. I think they didn't really get caught up in recency bias. And the team I point to is the team I mentioned. Iowa is the top four seed. Not that they're on the four line, but they're the top four line over some of those other teams like Texas Tech and Texas and specifically in our own committee bracketing. You know, we had Iowa as a five, the top five, but as a five.
It's largely because of me.
Well, no, it's because they weren't playing well. Now, they had a good win this weekend, but that if recency bias was so ingrained, you would not have seen him at 13. Maybe still the four line, maybe still mentioned, but not 13.
And what I like is just a couple of possible matchups. Gonzaga, Iowa already played this season. Baylor, Texas is a nice in-state battle. Villanova, Virginia, I'm sure Joby could go on for 5 minutes about those two teams playing each other.
Yeah, and you notice there the Baylor-Texas thing, two teams for the same conference because they had all of those Big 12 teams in there. I think five Big 12 teams on the seed lines there. And so, yeah, that's one of those bracketing rules. You actually can't have two teams of the same conference in the top four unless you get more than four teams of the same conference in those top 16.
I'm hijacking Chad's role as host here, but what does it say about Houston? You know, when you see Houston still on the two line with some pretty eye gougingly bad losses, what does that mean for a team like Drake or Loyola Chicago, or maybe some of these teams that haven't had as many shots to get the top of their profile bloated with, wins against protected seeds or wins against teams in the top half of the bracket? Is that a good sign for Loyola? Or I'm inclined to think it's good.
Well, let me jump into that one, actually, David. I'll give you my thoughts on it because, I think that is a good sign for those teams because it shows one of the things that the committee really values is that overall record when it is an obnoxiously good overall record, a 0-1 or 2-loss overall record.
Yeah.
And I think that's historically been the case, which is one of the reasons why I really like Belmont's profile right now because it's a 1-loss profile, even though they have no wins in the top two tiers.
Yeah, you scorched me today, by the way. Yeah. Thank you for that again. You're on welcome. My bracket. Like, I wasn't trying to. I love Belmont as a team. This is not under the radar. We will get to them. They're getting close. They're up to 28 in one of the polls and 29 in the other. I just can't get them inside the bubble, but I think they're good enough to be there. But then when I see the committee put Houston that high, I'm like, well, maybe they will look at Belmont.
Well, John, let me ask you that. Let's assume you have a 2-loss Belmont team that wins every game until the OVC title game and loses there. Do you think the committee would take a team with that type of record?
So they would still have 0 wins in the top two tiers?
They still have 0 wins in the top two tiers, but they would have only 2 losses on the entire season.
I'll defer to Joby, but I would be leaning no.
I'd lean no, given the OVC is just there. It's not like a MVC situation where the loss you receive is to, if Drake loses, now if they've split, which was the best thing that could have happened to the conference, by the way. Now if they've split, if they hold serve against everybody else, that's a big if. If there's one loss, that's not good for the conference. But if Loyola loses to Drake in the conference final or vice versa, there's still a really good chance the loser can get a bid.
Okay, well, let's
if Belmont loses to Eastern Kentucky, Morehead State, et cetera, that's a bad loss in terms of the net.
With Villanova, Villanova sixth overall. What does that say to you about how they evaluate shutdowns? I'm asking the experts, not Chad.
Joby?
I think they're trying to go with the resume and extrapolate the best they can, and they're hopeful. I guarantee in the case of Michigan, Villanova, et cetera, that they're doing their best to try to say, please play behind the scenes, and we'll deal with it later, but we'll evaluate the resume now for how it is. And Michigan showed, gave them their patience well. Villanova did not deliver on their patience.
That's all I had, Chad. We can move
okay.
On.
Let's move on. I want to move, even though we're already running behind. Thanks to David. We'll move over to applied resume tests as well today. And I got two not that great resumes. I just got to kind of get some thoughts on these two kind of lousy resumes here, and find out if you guys think that one of them is clearly better than each other or if they're fairly even. And John, let me start with you on this.
I would say they're not fairly even. OAR would swing obviously to the left. Non-conference strength of schedule swings to the left. And based on the fact that team on the left will be finished at this month in February and team on the right has a lot more games left, my guess is power conference right and mid-major left. We shall see.
I actually think that the team on the left, its conference is going to be scheduling a couple more games. It's just not on the screen yet. So,
I know what conference the one on the left is. I don't know which of the three teams it is, but I would tend to go with the one on the left because I have a feeling now look at the net at the tier one win. That's a 66 on the road. It's probably not that dramatically good. But the 30 win at home is nice. It is nice. Neutral. Yeah, they're both bubble. But I would say that probably the J&G has missed on the one on the right. It's closer than it should be.
I really don't like either one of them.
Okay, but it's 4-8 in conference.
I'll tell you what's going to be.
Boise and Colorado State?
I'll tell you what's really going to shock you guys is that the team on the left is actually the top 25 this week in one of the two polls. Mm-hmm. And the team on the left is, I kind of called David out for not liking this team in his bracket today. Now, he had them out entirely, which I think was dead wrong. But this team, I think, is very overrated by the polls on the left. So that's why I want to. That's why I want to compare them to a team that nobody's even thinking about on the right. San Diego State on the left, Michigan State on the right, who is not in any serious bubble discussion still, although they're going to have the chances.
Okay,
and I'm ragging on the Duke win. That's what it's
going on. Well, I just don't see anything there.
It's a stinky win. It's not bad.
Go ahead, David.
My question is, who would you have put them in over instead? I mean, it's not that I think that, to be fair to San Diego State, I think they're better than what their resume indicates, because while they only have four losses, but two of them are just a team that's just a bad matchup for them. And, you know, another one, a reasonably close game to BYU. I just don't see anything there. Like, when you look at the bubble, it seems to be this mess of, like, really bloated records and teams that have actually done some things. And San Diego State hasn't.
Well, John, are you surprised that Michigan State is this close to San Diego State? I mean, I know you like San Diego State better, but that it was actually a decent comparison of these two resumes.
It is fascinating. I always like when you do the blind resume, because I always learn a little bit about what my perspective should be. I'm a little surprised they are this close, because I have San Diego State clearly in the field and Michigan State clearly not in the field. As you'll see, like, San Diego State with the Boise games has a chance to go up or down. Michigan State seems like it can only go up, because I assume they're not going to be favored in any of the last six games.
Right. And Michigan State really still has a strong road to an at-large bid.
Yeah.
Because the three toughest games are home games. The other three are quality road games, Purdue, Indiana, Maryland. So, you know, just throw that out there. You know, they just picked up the home win over Penn State. That was the good tier two home win. The Duke win is the road game. So they're kind of bad tier one and tier two wins also.
Yeah.
Let's start in the Big Ten. Yeah,
can we get rolling, Chad? I mean, my God, you've been wasting all kinds of time here.
Let's go right into the Big Ten, which saw the return to the court of the Michigan Wolverines this weekend. And John, let me start with you. Joby, I know you've got some thoughts on them as well. But John, let me start with you on this Michigan team and what they did at Wisconsin.
So after taking 3 weeks off, great comeback win at the Badgers on Sunday. They trailed by 12 at halftime, but thanks to the freshman big man, Hunter Dickinson, 11 points, 15 boards, and a career-high 5 blocks. Everybody talks about the balanced offense. They have so many different scores all over the court. 40% allowed inside the arc, number one in the nation. This team gets it done with offense and defense. Huge week ahead. Rutgers coming to Ann Arbor Thursday, then the game of the year in Columbus on Sunday. I have them as a one seed, and it's solidly a one seed. Wait,
except that Thursday's Rutgers game is the game of the year. You got to throw it backwards there. Joe, you have some thoughts on the Wolverines also.
We've talked a lot this year about teams coming off COVID pauses and kind of stumbling out of the gates. Yeah, even Villanova, when they came off COVID pause, stumbled in their Seton Hall, you know, win that they got. You could just look across. Michigan did not stumble. They might have stumbled early, as John pointed out, but that is what happened. The difference with this Michigan team and some of the others is, and we've seen it across all these Power Five blue bloods who are not playing well. If you don't have a point guard, you're kind of lost. But if you do have a point guard, you have an advantage. Michigan essentially has two. And so this is one of the reasons that really makes Michigan special. I agree with John that they are clearly the three. We'll see if the trip to Columbus changes that. Three number one seed. We'll see how that's sorted out in a week.
Yeah, and David, I gotta say the other couple other big games were with another team, Ohio State took care of Indiana handily at home this weekend.
Right. That was a really impressive win. I was as impressed with Michigan. Not that winning it, I mean, winning at Wisconsin in and of itself is very, very hard to do. Winning at Wisconsin when it's your first game in forever after a COVID shutdown and you're rusty and you're behind by 12 at halftime is phenomenally impressive. I just can't say enough about Michigan. But Ohio State, while three games back in the loss column, neck and neck, I think when they meet head to head, that's going to settle the argument. But who do you like more? I still actually like Ohio State a little bit more than Michigan because of how good the top of their profile is. Now, again, three more losses than Michigan, and if Michigan beats them on Sunday, there isn't really an argument as to who's better, I don't think. But
I don't think there's an argument to who's better no matter after this game at all. I think this game will decide who's better, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
unless one of them slips up against somebody else, like Rutgers. Or
Miz at Illinois, at Iowa, at Whiskey, at Rutgers. That is ridiculously good.
And when you point out that Michigan State has a pathway, that's very interesting. They get to host them in both teams in East Lansing.
Yeah.
And one other team I want to really briefly mention here is down right there on the bubble. Maryland, you know, beats Minnesota, who cannot be anybody on the road, but
yeah.
You know, Minnesota goes to Maryland, loses and loses pretty handily to this Maryland team. Another tier one win for this Maryland team, but so many losses. Sitting there to 10-10 versus D1. And I think we're going to be having this debate for another 3 weeks, 4 weeks here, but what do you do with this 500 team?
Well, what would you do if they were 15-10 and had, you know, four more tier two wins? I think that you have to look
at them a ton because they've already played a bunch of crap. You know, look at the bottom.
Yeah, they have played a bunch.
Yeah, but Maryland has it in their hands. They're getting ready to play two bye games this week. And if they take care of business in those two bye games, all the discussion that I am very forcefully thinking on and others do as well goes away if you just take care of business. Look,
you got Northwestern,
Nebraska, Michigan State, Penn State. You win four of those six, and you will be favored handily in those four games. You take care of business. You do exactly what Rocco has said over and over again. It's in relation to Indiana. It's in a relation to Maryland. There is no way they are in the play-in game. They're either an 8/9/high 10 seed or they're out. Yeah. You know, there is no middle ground. And I think it's in front of Maryland to be able to be that 9 seed team, but they need to do it. If they lose to Nebraska at home, is anyone going to say they deserve a spot?
No, I will back off at that point. Chad, you briefly mentioned Minnesota. I know that, like, I'm more – this is grinding my nerves about them more than it is the rest of you. You have to win at least one road game. To me, that is a disqualifier, even more so than having a 500 record.
David, hold on. Let me ask John, who is our selection committee, to ask us the expert. Let's assume that there's five games left and Minnesota goes 3-2 in these, which means you add in an Illinois home win and a Rutgers home win, by the way, as well. But you can't win a road game. That is going to be the best profile we have
ever seen. No, it isn't. It's a terrible
for a team without a road win in history.
Yeah. Without a road win. Okay.
Would it not be?
We'd have to name a home court hero award after them because it is ridiculous, but it'd be hard to say to keep them out. I mean, I'll ask Chad, like, if you beat Rutgers this year, that's a tier one win, no doubt, right?
Yeah, the Rutgers home win would be barely, actually, Rutgers at 30 right now would be tier one, but barely. But if you had in an Illinois home win as well, giving you four top 10 wins at home, it would be the only team so far to beat Michigan in the entire country. I mean, come on, David. I'm sorry. I don't care that you can't win a road game, especially if you want to say that home and road don't matter quite as much this year without fans.
I mean, it seems to matter when they play. It seems to be the only deciding factor. I do remember, I want to say SMU, the first year that they were really good and sort of a home court hero, had four top 25 wins, which is not top 10, but they had some really good wins and they were left out. But I mean, this would be categorically A disqualifier. I don't think any team's ever been selected without at least two.
I'm sorry, David. You're going to put, if they win the Illinois home game again, you're going to have possibly five, if you put Purdue among the top, among a protective seed of the committee, saying they're almost there. You may have five protected seed wins at the top of your profile. I don't care where they are. I think
with no bad losses.
If they lose at home, they lose at home to Northwestern, we can talk about there's a problem.
Okay. Schedule somebody you can beat on the road then.
Well, North Carolina was looking for a game. Maybe they should have taken
it. real quick, here's the upcoming schedule for this week. Minnesota, road Wednesday night at Indiana. Let's circle that game.
Yes.
Home against Illinois on Saturday. We already mentioned the big Michigan-Ohio State game. You've also got Maryland at Rutgers. Iowa, Wisconsin, lots of big important games this week in the Big Ten. But let's keep things rolling along here. We're going to jump right over. Oh, we got a noise there. Okay. Yeah. We're going to jump right over to the ACC, where we have off-court news as well as on-court news today. Start with the off-court news. First of all, Jim Christian out at Boston College. Second of all, Jalen Johnson decided to quit from Duke. He opted out of the rest of the season, or whatever that means when there's three games left in the season, but Jalen Johnson is gone. But John, why don't we start with some of these games that were played? And before we get to tonight's game, how about Clemson picking up, sitting there now at a solid 13-5 overall?
New month, new team. This Tigers lost 4 of 5 to finish January. They've won 3 straight to start February, 13-5 overall. They get the whole week off to rest up before heading to Pitt on Sunday, and 3 winnable games to finish their regular season. Senior Clyde Trapp, he has not been shooting well this month at all, 9 of 24 from the field. Everything else has been great, though. 8 boards and 5 assists a game. I have them as a 7 seed.
I think they can get even higher than that. When you actually look at this Clemson profile, there's a lot of good there, even though they had been playing pretty lousy for a while. Had they not? Just pulled up here especially the Alabama win and the Purdue win at this
point. The only real knock on Clemson, and they're related, there's two knocks, but they're related, is the fact their net's not strong. And people get caught, I've mentioned on a number of shows, people get caught in ranking teams by the net. That's not how it works, people. It's not how it works. But you look and dive into the resume. Why is their net low? It's because when they lose, they really lose.
They lose bad.
At the end of the day, you can't ignore Florida State, which I think after tonight, protected seed. Alabama, protected seed. Purdue on the verge. And then the second tier is good wins. The Maryland team we're talking about, the Louisville. This is North Carolina is probably in the bubble, inside the bubble. This is really good resume. I actually think it's being disrespected. Now, maybe the committee is too, but I think it's being disrespected by a lot of the pundits. And they will be a Selection Sunday surprise to a lot of people.
Well, I tell you, they need to hold, sir, because, again, just one true road win, but 3 very winnable road games coming up. They win all 3 of those. I think the net's going to go up. I think that suddenly you're looking at a 7-6 caliber seed for sure at that point, and maybe even higher, even though none of those teams are anywhere – near the bubble.
Joby, real quick, I know your thoughts on the team I pulled up on the right there.
Georgia Tech, they play close. They've lost close to Clemson this week, but I'm starting to really like how they play. This is an eye test thing. And what I want to point out is the upcoming schedule, that far right column. Okay. They will be favored in 5 of those 6 games. If they win every game they're favored and lose at Virginia Tech, which is not a shame, that's a team that's well on the good side of the bracket, wearing white. If all of a sudden you wake up and they're sitting at 15-9 with, the Florida State win, who was, I think it's going to look better and better. All of a sudden you dismiss the early 2 losses and they beat Pitt in the tournament. They beat Pitt or somebody of that level before they get beaten by Florida State or Virginia in the second round. All of a sudden, you have to really seriously be talking about the Jackets if they take care of business on what taking care of business is not that tough at the end of the day. Because, let's face it, the 2 open day losses, they happened. They're what's weighing them down, and deservedly so. But by the same token, you've got to, I think we'll be looking at them with a new light, because those two losses did happen before they knew what they had with, you know, Moses Wright has coming out game, the second of those. And so I think you've got to watch Georgia Tech, because the pathway is realistic, not just it can happen like a team like Michigan State, but it's realistic.
A couple notes here. First of all, jumping back to Clemson for half a second. They did just go into a shutdown today because of a
COVID test. That's right.
That's going to hurt some of those road games, see if they can even get them. But, David, I quickly pulled up Florida State, who we just saw. Joby, I don't think you want to talk about it. Just saw completely destroy his Virginia team today. And I think that this gives Florida State that kind of that missing piece at the top of the resume now, that kind of, you know, that highlight huge win there. Does it not?
I think it does. You know, they've beaten a protected seed. They've beaten a team that's probably in the top half of the bracket on the road. And Florida, I don't know how that game's going to be evaluated. I almost don't even want to try and guess, but it still looks good to have that win. I really like this Florida State team. I don't think they've been playing up to their ceiling for most of the season for various reasons. They certainly did tonight. I think they're as good as anyone in this conference when they're playing, when they're firing on all cylinders. And when you look at sort of what's left, they're really running downhill. They got Vatek at home, who's really good, but I don't think as good, and they're at home. I think they can win out all the way to the conference tournament.
A game at North Carolina could be one to circle here. North Carolina has been playing a lot better lately.
They have.
And what's interesting is
Virginia profile also.
What's interesting with Florida State, Virginia is, yeah, I think that Virginia's loss, I think because of Villanova, and Lenardi said this, I happen to agree for once, is they were like number eight. They had moved to like number eight, but this loss knocks them back down to the three line. I think Florida State might have jumped a full scale line here because of the missing component on their profile. The J&G, I ran the numbers beforehand, Virginia fell to 10th. Florida State moved all the way up to 12th in just inputting that one game. And not saying it's definitive, but who would you rather play now, Iowa or Florida State? I know the answer to that question.
Oh, I know the answer to that.
Okay,
I guess who I would rather play.
Let's keep things rolling. Here's the upcoming schedule. A note that North Carolina just added this evening a home game against Northeastern for this week.
But good game for both teams, to be honest.
I believe we have Virginia at Duke, Louisville, North Carolina coming up this weekend. Hopefully most of these games we can get in here, but we'll see what we can get in. But yeah, very interesting. Carolina adds an extra game in there.
Sort of a bye. Why wasn't Winthrop, Belmont?
Okay, let's keep going here.
All the teams they could have.
Let's jump over to the Big 12, where Baylor not playing. But John, let me bring you back in here, because after we had almost given up on this Kansas team the way they were playing, have they finally figured it out and turned things around?
Just like Clemson, another team that lost 4 of 5 to finish January, but they've won 4 of 5 to start February, 9 and 5 in conference play, rivalry game at K-State on Wednesday, and then 3 brutal games to finish the regular season, Texas Tech and Texas and Baylor. Freshman Jalen Wilson, he went scoreless against TCU last month. It's been spectacular in the 6 games since then, averaging a double-double, 14 points and 10 boards a game. I have them as a 6 seed, but obviously trending up towards a 5.
Yeah, I think the 5 seed is – they were heading towards a 7 or an 8 seed. I think they're back on to a 5. And with those games, yeah. I think a 4 seed is still in play for them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about lifting some heavy weight, not Kansas State excluded. You know, they have – is that the whole schedule, or is there more to come?
There would be 2 more games that are not on the screen there.
Okay.
I don't want to get too excited over Kansas. They beat Iowa State and Oklahoma State at home. I mean, that's
but if they
earned it, but
yeah. Yeah. No, what I was saying, Joby, was Texas Tech, Texas, and Baylor, and then the Big 12 tournament after that. That is a hell of a stretch. Well, but
they get their opportunities.
Yeah.
Joby, but the issue I had was that Kansas had been playing so lousy. I mean, they looked bad in the home win over TCU just 2 weeks ago. They look good this week, and that's the difference. But I know you want to talk about the team on the right there, the red hot Oklahoma Sooners.
I love these guys. And Reeves is, now that Reeves is healthy, I mean, my gosh, this is a team that I think has, and this is my hot take on them, is they are the team that maybe can challenge Baylor when given the chance. You know, I mean, this is now that they're playing their best ball now, and they've been playing good ball all year for the most part. They have all the pieces that seem to go, the ability they have. I love offensively how they drive, how they can drive as well as hit the outside shot. That is a good inside outside combo that is reminiscent of the team they, from the SEC, they beat Alabama. And going into Morgantown, getting to West Virginia win. Wow.
Especially with West Virginia coming off that road win at Texas Tech.
This is not a slouch West Virginia team on their strength of play. Says everything to me about how this Oklahoma team's playing. And also, it's not shabby because I think West Virginia's darn good too. It's just a great conference, and Oklahoma's playing the best since Baylor's on pause. Is playing the best of anyone right now.
You see an upcoming schedule. These games are all being rearranged like crazy already, so don't even trust half the games that are up there on the screen. I do think we have Texas Tech at Kansas coming up this weekend at West Virginia at Texas. Those games I think are a go. I know that Baylor West Virginia have been rescheduled. There will be a Baylor West Virginia game at some point this season too. Other than that, just take the rest of that Big 12 schedule with a grain of salt, especially with the weather down there in Texas having wreaked even more havoc on this conference than we already had. Let's jump over to the Big East, though, and maybe. But, David, one of the big stories of the Big East was Creighton, who picked up picked up a win that I think finally took care of the problem I had with Creighton's profile, which is those Tier 3 home losses by taking out on Philadelphia.
Yeah, and it came at a time when Creighton was really starting to appear to decline, you know, losing games that you would think they would win. Not looking that impressive. And then it's just on a scale of 1 to 10, they went from 0 to about 30 as far as, you know, how good they looked from one game to the next. And, I mean, they just blew Villanova's doors off. I mean, it was just totally dump-trucking them. And suddenly you forget about losing to Georgetown and Providence and Seton Hall. And, like, look at what they had done in the previous game.
They never lost. They didn't lose Seton Hall.
They actually lost Marquette.
Marquette, I'm sorry. Yeah. But I was looking. Yeah. I can't seem to read the profile. I'm sorry. I've been drinking all day. Yeah. But they did beat. They went at Seton Hall. But yeah, it just completely changed the complexion of the team. And more so than the complexion of the profile, for the first time in a long time, I just like how they looked on the court. Kind of like what you said about Kansas. Like, they did look really good.
Right, and you got all those tier two wins to go with the tier 1A and that huge Villanova home win. Speaking of Villanova, Joby, any cause for concern with, you know,
I think there
St.
Is,
John's
actually,
loss and now this loss?
Well, I think there most certainly is. It's not DEFCON 1, but we're on the DEFCON chart, you know, for the first time this season. I mean, St. John's is maybe not a fluke in this regard. And here's what you've had, what we have to wonder is, and this goes back to our very first discussion that started off this call. I mentioned, wow, it showed that the Big Ten and Big 12, you know, they're very hefty. Well, there was only one ACC team. There was only one Big East team, American, you know, Sarah, and the Pac-12 team was a 5. So if you're not in the two big conferences right now, and the SEC teams are sliding, except for Alabama, you don't have a lot of potential to get wins. And so Villanova lost one of their best chances to get a tournament win, because as down as we talk about the ACC or the Pac-12 is a mess, etc. No. The Big East is kind of a mess. You know, Creighton's win is kind of over Villanova, got them their second team. And Seton Hall's in the tournament right now, etc. But this is not as strong a conference, so Villanova can't rack up the wins you would traditionally get in the Big East in February. They're just not there as prevalent as you would normally get.
John, going more towards the bubble in the Big East, I just put up Seton Hall's profile on the left there. They have won 3 in a row, though.
It is. A lot of my teams tonight are teams who are bad in January and good in February. This team qualifies. The Pirates lost 3 to finish January. Granted, Villanova and Creighton as the 3 opponents are very tough. They've won 3 straight to start this month, 9-5 in conference play. As you can tell, the schedule was front-loaded with January's tough teams. So now they have 5 winnable games to finish the regular season, and God knows they need all of them. senior Miles Kale has been really up and down this year. He seems to be getting it right and going out with a bang as a senior. 16 points a game and only 3 total turnovers in his past 5. I have them as a 10 seed.
Yeah, I think that's probably really what I'm seeing out of them, and they are going in the right direction. David, real quick here, UConn, a team that was heading very much in the wrong direction until they may have saved their season with the win at Xavier this week.
Yeah, they did. And again, the fact that it came on the road, Xavier probably straddling the bubble now, maybe still inside of it, but it gave them a really nice road win and kind of got the car turned back around and hopefully on the tracks. I tend to like this UConn team more than I probably should. When you look at the profile and you watch them play, I kind of ask myself, why is it that I like them? But I like
them with Boat Knight, but I, you know, yeah. Like, without him is.
Yeah. And it has been different. And another reason the Xavier win was big. Can we give our good friend John Stalica 30 seconds? What does everybody think of Xavier? Where are they? Are they in free fall, but still inside the bubble? Are they outside of it yet?
I think they're well inside the bubble right now, but they're by no means safe.
It's
the force of will.
Well, when you look at that profile, the home win against Oklahoma at a time when Oklahoma had not really kicked it into gear yet, and their next best win is what?
Toledo.
Yeah.
It's Toledo.
Yeah, I guess it is, yeah.
By the same token, you know, you don't lose at home. You can argue in Seton Hall and Connecticut, but at least those are teams we're discussing. Okay. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, here's the upcoming schedule of games, allegedly. Xavier St. John's, a very bubblish looking game.
Yeah, real bubblicious game tomorrow if it's played, because it's snowing.
if it's played, we've also got, you know, UConn with a huge test at Villanova, you know, that could completely turn the season around. And with Villanova playing the wrong way, at least recently, who knows? Let's jump over to the SEC, though. And John, I think I want to go back to you with, I think it's your same theme again of teams that have suddenly rebounded in February. How about LSU, who I had given up on 2 weeks ago?
And you thought that I had finished my run of Tigers doing bad in January like Clemson, but I have another one in LSU. Lost 4 of 5 entering last week, bounced back with double-digit wins over Mississippi State and Tennessee to improve to 8-4 in conference play. 2 winnable games this week at Missouri and at Mississippi and host Auburn. And freshman Cameron Thomas remains a scoring machine. Past 3 weeks, 25 points a game, 38 of 40 from the free throw line. All he's going to do is shoot some less threes. He's under 30% from behind the arc and pass the ball more, and he might be the conference player of the year. I have them as a 10 seed.
David, he said that the game is winnable at Ole Miss. You want to take exception with on that statement? With this Ole Miss resume up here, the way they've been playing lately.
Well, yeah, okay, he said winnable. He didn't say that it was a slam dunk. I think they're good enough to win it. I don't think they will. And that's more praise for Ole Miss than it is a knock on LSU, because I really like how LSU had been playing. I think for the first time in forever, had them in my field today. But I really just think while Ole Miss's profile isn't all the way up there yet, it's getting there. And they are playing really, really well. I think they've got – I think it's a winnable game for them. I think every game, maybe minus going to Missouri, is a game that they could win the rest of the way.
Yeah. Speaking about teams
winning. How about Kermit? I mean, there he is.
Speaking about teams winning in Missouri, Arkansas completely fixed their resume this weekend with a huge win at Missouri.
And that
now suddenly makes this resume with nothing bad on it and a lot of wins. Suddenly you add in a very good road win at Missouri. And in my opinion, this team went from you know, a first four or out team, to like an 8 seed with that one.
Well, you all were doubters. I have been big on Arkansas all year long. I just wanted to say that.
I agree. I agree, Chad, 100%. It's one of those. Do you remember Auburn last year? It was very, very similar 2 years ago. Auburn was just needing something, needing a road win, needing what it's like, gosh, Auburn, we know they're better, or et cetera. I didn't know Arkansas was any good. But all of a sudden, one win does 5 lines of seeding difference. I mean, it's 4 to 5 lines of seeding difference. And that's what we got with Arkansas's win at Missouri. And so Arkansas, now as long as you take care of business. I mean, they can afford to lose to Alabama at home now. You know, they can afford to lose, you know, some good games as long as they beat the teams they're supposed to beat and lose the teams they're supposed to lose to. They're going to be fine now, which was not the case had they done what you would expect they would have done by going to Columbia, Missouri and losing. That wouldn't have been that crazy a thought, we would have thought.
I never doubted him. Just don't go back and watch the old podcast.
Other teams, we saw Tennessee lose that LSU game.
Tennessee has, I don't know what's, LSU is playing at the highest level they have all year. That is true. The panel said it. I agree 100%. But Tennessee has all of a sudden hit a wall, and it's an ugly wall. And they're not playing. They're not passing the ball well. It's like they're disjointed. Whereas earlier in the season, when I and I think a lot of others were so impressed, they had a defensive lockdown. They had an offense with identity. There is zero identity on their offense right now. And they're adrift. And you talk about the recency bias of the committee, including them in the first 16 that they announced this weekend. Tennessee, if they're not careful, if they play like they did against LSU, they're going to be lucky to be wearing white, let alone, you know, sniffing a lot of these teams.
Well, the committee just put them on the three line, Joby.
First round exit team.
This is the reason why I've been disagreeing with all of you on Tennessee for a couple of weeks now, but everyone else has thought they were a lot higher rated than I was. I think that they're falling down to where I personally thought they were. But let's take a quick look at the upcoming schedule in the SEC and then move on to a few more conferences here where we've got, I don't know, we've got nothing at the moment here. We do have the LSU at Ole Miss game, which is the second time they've gone to Ole Miss this season, just the way COVID is working. I don't know that there's Alabama gets Vanderbilt.
Kentucky pulled off a win this weekend. Let's see if they've turned it around a little bit and beat this slumping Tennessee team, to be very honest. That's a big game.
They almost beat them the last time.
Exactly. And so this is a big game because Tennessee loses to Kentucky at home. This is the free fall situation.
I'll tell you a team that could use a couple of wins, winnable road games, Missouri at Georgia, at South Carolina this week. If those games are go, really, Missouri could really use those, especially if coming off of that Arkansas loss. But over in the Pac-12, John, how about the Oregon Ducks? Right direction or wrong direction?
All right, well, thanks to the Arizona schools, they're in the right direction. They started 4-3 in conference play. Ducks bounced back in a big way, sweeping the road trip in Tempe and Tucson. Huge game on Thursday when Colorado comes to Eugene. I'm sure they wish they could get some fans in there to boo during the free throws. Their opponents are shooting 77% from the line. One of the best in the nation. They've had some major injury problems all year. And Fali Dante out for the year. Eric Williams has missed three of the past four games. But they're starting to get healthy. Will Richardson, Chris Duarte, LJ Figueroa, all back on the court. Finally, they have enough depth to compete for 40 minutes. I have them as an 11 seed.
They're on the way up. Joby,
I think they are too.
Joby, UCLA loses.
Should have lost to Washington.
To Washington State and almost lost to Washington.
Really should have lost to Washington. And the key is, it's what we discussed in the USC game last week, is you realize how big Riley is to them. Both defensively as that presence in the middle. He got in foul trouble this weekend all over the place. And sloppy. Once again, I guess if John's theme is teams that we had left for dead in January and they're rising like Lazarus, my theme is, given on the heels of our Tennessee comments, are teams that, you know, aren't who we thought they were.
Because UCLA was one of those Lazarus teams last year, if you remember. Yeah. They came out of nowhere late to really put together a great run. They're headed the wrong way this year in February.
You think the coaching will still be able to retain that, but it's once again the word disjointed that I talk about with Tennessee. It's also, if you've looked at UCLA on that Washington trip, we will see. This week is a big week for UCLA. See, well, that was just a weird trip. They're flying all over the state. It's a tough trip to go up to, you know, to do the, you know, that was a bad, the Thursday, Saturday trip, because Pullman to Seattle is not an easy, it's not just, you know, it's not a bus ride. So this is a big week for UCLA. It's a fulcrum week. And, you know, they could stabilize the whole thing and they're still in the top half of the bracket. So it's, but right now their resume has gotten all of a sudden exceedingly poor and they are on the bottom half of the bracket as they sit right now.
And David, what the hell? What David, happened to him?
David, I want to ask about one
injuries. Injuries have really messed them up, and like I said, that they've met. That Riley is just not playing the way he was defensively earlier in the year. Foul trouble and letting other teams have their way inside. Otherwise,
David, I want to ask about one more team real quickly here.
Sure,
Colorado.
Yeah,
goes to Stanford and wins, then goes to Cal and loses.
Pull them up because this isn't the first time they have had a head scratching loss, and it happens to everybody. I mean, everybody loses a game that people were expecting them to win or they felt like they should, but it seems like Colorado, it's been happening a lot. Utah at home, Utah, not the worst team in the world, but at home
they blew an 18 point lead late in that game too. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Cal is perhaps not the worst team in the world either, but they're in the discussion. Washington is the worst team in the world.
They're beating Washington State right now, though. So
yeah, they are.
Not quite as bad. Yeah, but this Colorado team, very head-scratching week this past week. Here's that upcoming schedule. We've got that huge Colorado-Oregon game.
LA.
We've got UCLA hosting the Arizona schools, as is USC. So some pretty interesting games on the schedule here for this week in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
Let's real quick run through some other conferences here. Over in the American, Houston, after that game that they lost against East Carolina, did bounce back, took care of South Florida this past week. John, what about Wichita State now in second place?
And it cannot be easy to be a Shockers fan. On their current four-game win streak, they got one win in overtime. Their other three wins are by a combined 12 points. Everything goes down to the wire with this team. They only lost to Houston by 7 on the road last month, so we'll see if they can shock the world during the rematch on Thursday in Wichita. Junior big man Morris Udeze, he's been great during this win streak. 11 points a game, 19 of 27 from the field.
Houston, getting back there, that is the key in. They'll have to beat them, but I find it curious that Houston loses to East Carolina, loses to Tulsa. The voters don't seem to mind voting them 5 and 6. The committee didn't seem to mind still putting them on the 2 line. Is beating Texas Tech really that great? I mean, I think Houston's excellent. I have them as a protected seed down on the 3 line, but wow. I don't think that they're fifth in the country.
Well, let's see. We'll see how that plays out. Obviously, they've got some more games to go. Over in the Atlantic 10, Joby. As these games, this screen loads here, give it half a second. There we go. We saw VCU have a very good week with a road win at Dayton and then the huge win over the Bonnies.
Yeah, in VCU, it's the sort of week they're going to be teams out of the A-10. The Mountain West is similar. Just by force of will, as long as you don't have those teams lose outside their pod, the pod being the Bonnies, St. Louis, Richmond, VCU, and maybe even Davidson you can include, but the as long as you don't have these bad losses like the LaSalle one that hit earlier this year in the Bonnies, you're going to be able to float up. And if you're at the top of this bubble of four teams, you're going to get a bid along with the automatic, which could be VCU for all we know. And so I think you're looking at least two bids out of this league. Right now, VCU's win over the Bonnies was so huge because they might be that second bid right now.
Well, John, what about Richmond? Could they be the second bid?
They could. Everybody forgot about the Spiders. They lost at home to LaSalle, which is a good reason to forget about them. And then they didn't play for the first 2 weeks of February, but they're 11-4 overall. Huge game on Wednesday. VCU makes the 6 mile drive up Monument Avenue for their only matchup of the regular season. Senior point guard Jacob Billiard leading the nation with 3.8 steals a game. Nobody else is even close to him. And they're one of the only teams in the country who's used the exact same starting lineup all season long. If they win Wednesday, I think they can swap in and take VCU's spot as an 11th seed.
Very good observation there. I think Richmond is a little better than VCU. I like how both are playing now. That is a hugely important game. I think they were scheduled twice, but did one have to be shut down, or is this rescheduled?
Actually, quick update. It has just been added back in for March 6th, the last game of the season.
Yes, sir!
They will play a second time at Richmond
March 6th.
Not on the screen yet.
And that's so valuable to both those teams because, the loss isn't going to kill you, but the win is – you're beating either a tournament team or a team highly in the discussion.
I know we all know this, but in people watching know this, I don't know why I'm bothering to say it then. This is a heated rivalry. In addition to being an important game, it's a fun rivalry.
As John pointed out, they're 6 miles apart.
Yes.
That's even closer than Durham.
Than Wazoo-Wadaho. Yes, yes, it is.
Even closer than the 8 miles of Durham.
So the game Wednesday will be at VCU, not at Richmond. The game at the end of the season will be the one at Richmond. Again, scheduling being changed around on the fly here. Also, David, real quick, Friday night, we have it, round two, St. Louis at Dayton.
Yes! Oh my God. Like, you want to talk about a heated rivalry. You want to just talk about, all of the civil unrest, all of it is really revolving around the Arch Baron Cup.
Yeah, which is where we're right over to the Mountain West. John, we started the show by showing that San Diego State profile. What about the Aztecs? Are you still high on them?
I am now. 1 month ago, I wasn't. They got swept on the road at Utah State, but they've won 6 in a row by 20 plus points each game to improve to 9-3 in conference play. A relatively easy doubleheader in Fresno this weekend. Then they host Boise in a huge doubleheader next week. They're living by the three, top 25 in the nation with 38% shooting behind the arc. My main cause for concern is that senior leader Matt Mitchell missed 2 games during the win streak with injuries, and he scored 10 or less in 2 of the other 4 games. If he's healthy and playing well, I have them as a 9 seed.
Yeah, we got San Diego State there. We have Boise State, who survived their second game against UNLV, but did get the 2 wins. Colorado State did not play this week.
Yeah, they've looked really anemic in the last, not just against UNLV, but against just about everybody. Boise, after looking so good.
Yeah, Boise allegedly is going to get Utah State at home this week, so that should be a real good test for them. We can get to take a good look at them. Colorado State, a road trip to Nevada, tough road trip for them, in fact.
Yeah, Nevada playing pretty well right now.
And what I appreciate about the Mountain West is they actually have a pretty good deal right now with both CBS Network and Fox Sports. If only the Pac-12 could actually be seen, they might be able to have similar games.
haven't hit yet the number one team in the nation. Obviously, the Zags, they won fairly easily at San Francisco in their only game this past week. BYU did not play this week, so not much to talk about in terms of results in the West Coast. Other than Pepperdine, John, with a pretty good week?
There were 30 seconds of our time, I think. Great pair of single-digit wins over a couple of good teams, San Fran and St. Mary's last week, 6-3 in conference play. They get the entire week off before a road trip next weekend. They're at Santa Clara and then have the revenge game with St. Mary's. The reason they're winning these close games, 77% shooting from the line, top 25 in the nation, and 28% allowed behind the arc, top 10 in the nation. Senior point guard Colby Ross wrapping up an amazing career. He's the all-time leading already the leader in points and assists and free throw percentage in the school history. They split their season series with BYU already. I could see them easily making the conference tourney title game and then losing by 20 to the Zags.
By 20, maybe by 50.
Real quick, San Diego visits Gonzaga this Saturday. Quick question about this game. If Gonzaga misses the bus.
I don't know if that game is on or not.
Oh, it's not? Okay. Well, if it is, and Gonzaga, for some reason, can't get to the arena until the second half, will they still win by 20?
One more team to address real quick here. Still in the top 25, despite splitting this week, is Loyola Chicago. They had the Missouri Valley series of the season. They went to Drake Saturday, completely crushed them, 81-54, but lost. I believe it was overtime loss by 1 point in game 2 on Sunday. Joby, let me start with you. Loyola Chicago still –
I referenced it earlier. This is the best result the Missouri Valley could have hoped for. Loyola Chicago, I think, is the better team, as evidenced by the point differential in the two games, and was at Drake. But
they won the aggregate. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but the fact that it was a split gives each of those two teams a quality win, which, guess what? Before they look at the Tier 1, before this weekend, was there anything in Tier 1 for either? No. Is there Tier 1 for each of them now? Yes. And as David was pointing out, the top of the profile matters, and maybe more than the bottom of the profile. So this was a very good week for them. Now, I will say, don't slip up against Southern Illinois or Valpo, and on the other end, if all of a sudden Drake loses to Bradley, okay, that actually dramatically hurts Loyola Chicago, because now Drake is probably not in the field, and thus all of a sudden the Missouri Valley final of Drake, Loyola Chicago, no longer two tournament teams, but winner take all, because all of a sudden if Loyola Chicago loses to Drake in the finals, they lost to a non-tournament team, and so they're out. And so it's very precarious. They should be rooting for each other until the conference final.
I agree with that on the team sheet. Joby, the one thing to consider is the NABC rankings. Despite not having the best profile, I think Loyola Chicago will be high enough in that to where, if that happens, hopefully the committee takes them anyway, but that's supposing.
David, I'm going to point you to something else that is on the team sheets. Some of these predictive metrics, look at that number 10 KenPom rating. Look at the fact that they now have the number one defense in the entire nation. I think this Loyola Chicago team may surprise everybody when they end up like the 7 line at the end of the day.
Yeah, they're good. They are probably a top 30 team in the nation. I don't know if 7 line sounds about right to me. 7-8 range, yeah.
On that note, though, that does conclude the conference we're going to go to. We're going to move on to final thoughts. And, John, I'm going to start with you before I pull down the screen share, because you want to talk about a guy whose picture I'm going to pull up right here.
So if you don't know this guy, I want you to get to know him. This is the interim coach at BC, Scott Spinelli, who's taking over for Jim Christian.
John, you broke up there. I'm sorry. Could you repeat who he is? You kind of broke up.
Yes. No problem. Scott Spinelli is the interim coach at BC, replacing the recently fired Jim Christian. Great track record. Played for Mike Jarvis back in the day at BU. He was a scout for the 76ers. He was an assistant to Barry Collier at Nebraska, an assistant to Mark Turgeon at 3 different schools, an amazing recruiter. I still don't know if he can actually coach. He has turned like 5 different unranked recruits into NBA players. So I also don't know if he's going to be around for more than like 5 games they have this month, but I really hope he gets a chance. This is a longtime guy who's an amazing recruiter who's finally getting his chance to shine as a coach.
Yes, hopefully he can get a few wins and maybe be in serious consideration for that permanent job. I think it was a shock. I think it was actually a shame that Jim Christian was fired, especially at this time.
Yeah, I think he was too. And I agree with Tytel. Even if BC doesn't hire him, he's hopefully positioning himself for a job.
Right. Joby, though, let me move over to you.
Yeah, no, and, you know, the interesting thing is Florida State's on a run right now after beating Virginia tonight where they can break the ACC record for most consecutive home wins, beating great runs by Virginia, Duke under Kay in the early 2000s. They can break this record. They get BC in that final game to try to do it, so I'm going to bet my money that BC, he doesn't get that win in Tallahassee. When you look at the seedless that, you know, whether you go to bracket matrix or et cetera, it's very interesting this year. It's something I haven't seen to this degree. And you see conferences grouping. You see a lot of teams from a conference grouped together. The Big Ten, you can see, you know, it's obvious, you know, Michigan, Ohio State, Illinois all grouped together, but you see these groupings. It's very interesting. The Big Ten, you know, has those groupings of Indiana, Maryland back, but the Big 12 is a very interesting one to look at in that you have these groupings for the Big 12 in the protected seed and the top half of the bracket. After Oklahoma State or Kansas, wherever you want to rank them, the two of them, there's no bubble team. It's like a gap all the way down to TCU, and it's filled by all these conferences like those two Missouri Valley teams, the Mountain West, the A-10. All of them are ahead of the TCUs right now of the world. It'll be very interesting, which means you're going to see, I think, from these secondary conferences, you're going to see more teams than maybe you, the person on the street actually thinks, because there's a lack of other teams on the bubble to push them out, notwithstanding some of those Big Ten teams getting to 500, you know, like Michigan State or Maryland or et cetera, surprising us.
I'll tell you what, David, before I let you finish out the show, one other quick news, piece of news here that came out today is that the NIT will in fact be played this year. It will be a 16-team NIT instead of 32.
Yeah.
It will all be played in New York, and there will be no automatic bid. So if you win a small conference regular season title, you are not guaranteed an NIT spot this year as you've been in the past. It'll just be 16-team tournament. But let me let you finish out the show.
Okay. Well, I'm just really excited, and I was hoping that you could give me about 15 or 20 minutes here at the end of the show, because we had on Saturday, it was back. It was the border war. There it is. As you see there, Kansas taking on Missouri. What a game it was. It went in the overtime. It was just as exciting and as awesome as it had ever been. I was just glad it's back. I mean, this rivalry, it goes back to 1891.
David, I got a problem since. Here. The damn buzzer's not working, but you're muted. Okay, you're out of here. On behalf of, I can't even get rid of that, the picture off my screen. There he is. He's gone. He is not doing 20 minutes on Arkansas and a post-it note. But on behalf of Joby Fordson, David Grace, who won't be back again next week, and John Tytel, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you again real soon.